Now, in a few moments, we're going to read from 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. It's a short book of the Bible toward the end of the Bible. All of the letters from a man named Paul are in a row, and this comes right toward the end of his letters in the New Testament. Now, last week, if you remember, if you were here, we began a short sermon series. We're calling it Life Together. It's part of the Human Project sermon series we began in January. And for the next few weeks, we're focused on relationships, or what it means to live life together. And we're trying to think about all the relationships in our lives, not just certain kinds of relationships, but us as relational beings. And I said, maybe too obviously, that our relationships are meant to be founded in love, right? That's always meant to be the foundational reality of our relationships. And maybe too obvious, but I'm learning in all kinds of situations, sometimes the obvious thing needs to be said clearly and said out loud publicly. So whatever we talk about this week and coming weeks about life together, the reality of love is meant to be at the foundation. And this past week, I was in email contact with someone, and they described the message in these words. They said, God provides energy where at times there is none, at least humanly speaking. There seems to be no energy. He also provides love. Love to allow clashing personalities to live at peace, more than at peace, to live and serve in the kingdom together. And I thought, well, that was pretty well said. Let me just share that with us this morning. And I think a good question to be asking us as a church community is, how are we doing? How are we doing with the loving each other? A good question to ask and to try to answer on a regular basis. So I'm sure it depends on who you talk to. So this past week I'm talking to someone and they're kind of overwhelmed by the phone calls, overwhelmed in a good way, the phone calls and the contacts and the people praying for them. They're getting a very tangible, I think, expression of the love of the church community. And I'm hoping that more and more of us could say that or experience that. Not kind of love like nebulous, like, oh, we're supposed to love each other, but we have no idea how to do that. But really love that's tangible. I'm really hoping for anyone who's here for a number of weeks, that very quickly you start to experience at Nelson Avenue very tangible and very practical ways that we are called to love each other. Now, just before we read, I should say that the message is basically done this morning. But the ending, I'm not too sure about. So when we get to the ending, I might actually ask some of you to finish the sermon, right? So that's going to require, if you're going to be one of those people that helps finish the sermon, it's going to require, oh, I got to have a little sense of what he's talking about. So if he points at me, Samuel, he points at me, I'm ready to come up and finish the sermon this morning, right, with maybe some practical application. So let me invite Colleen to come up and read 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 to 12.
You know, brothers and sisters, that our visit to you was not without results. We had previously suffered and been treated outrageously in Philippi, as you know, but with the help of our God, we dared to tell you his gospel in the face of strong opposition. For the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as those approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We are not trying to please people, but God, who tests our hearts. You know we never use flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We were not looking for praise from people, not from you or anyone else, even though, as apostles of Christ, we could have asserted our authority. Instead, we were like young children among you. Just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. Surely you remember, brothers and sisters, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel of God to you. You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Now, as we do on Sunday mornings, we've again read some verses from the Bible, and we do that because of our conviction as a church community, what the Bible is meant to be for us. We do that because it's part of our custom and our tradition. But also, this morning, I want to add that the Bible is a great resource for us as we think about relationships. And the Bible does a couple of things, I think, very unique. It gives us all kinds of different relationships in the story of the Bible. So as if you're reading the Bible, there's all kinds of different interactions that people have, all kinds of different relationships. And then the thing the Bible does also in this passage does really well, I think unlike any other book that you would ever read, is it always holds our two most important relationships always together, right? So it's never just about me and God, and it's never just about me and you, or me and us, or us together. It's always the relationship with God and our relationship with each other always woven together. And that seems to be also the case in this passage. I find this a remarkable passage. And one of the reasons why I wanted to read it, among others, but one of them was to counteract the thought in the minds of some people. I'm not saying people here this morning, but for some people, the author of this passage, Paul, who is the author of a number of books in the Bible, is a rather crabby person. Some people who think about Paul, this author, they think of him as rather gruff, not very friendly, almost a spiritual dictator. They don't see much love and affection in Paul's personality. And as I read this passage, I think, man, this passage is loaded with affection and love and relational language. I'm also reading the passage in part because of the view that some people, when they think about leadership, all kinds of leadership, but also especially church leadership, they think about leaders almost like they have to be like generals, right? Leaders are people who are meant to give the orders and give the commands and cast the vision, but almost detached from the people they're leading or they're serving. So I want to use this passage as a way of thinking about leadership, but also I want to think, especially church leadership, how can this passage help us? Before we get to some of the verses, I do want to set it up a little bit by looking at a bit of the historical, cultural background. And as we think about where this passage was written from or when it was written, Paul, the author, with his companions, they are on what's called Paul's second missionary journey. And they are traveling through modern-day Turkey, and they're going to places like Derbe, Lystra, Antioch, Ephesus, and they come to a place called Troas, right on the coast there. And in Troas, Paul has a vision. He has a dream. And in the dream, there's a man who says, come over and help us. A man from the province of Macedonia. So Paul was not planning. He was hoping to kind of stay. Sorry about that. Looks better on the back. But he was hoping to stay on kind of the right side. But he has his vision, come over and help us. And so he senses the Spirit is calling him into a new area, a new region for ministry. And so he crosses the Aegean Sea and he goes to a place called Philippi, where he's cast into prison. And then he goes to a place called Thessalonica, where this letter is written to people in that city. And there, people attack him and accuse him, and basically he's run out of town after 3 weeks. And then he goes to Berea, and the people from Thessalonica, the troublemakers, follow him to Berea, cause more trouble for Paul. And so his companions say, you have to get out of here. It's too dangerous for you, and you're just a lightning rod for all this trouble. You go on ahead to Athens. We'll stay in Berea. We'll kind of, you know, take care of the church here. And so most people think that this letter, 1 Thessalonians, is written in either Athens or Corinth, just a short time after Paul's been in Thessalonica. And he's only been there for 3 weeks. And I'm amazed, now maybe some of us have had this experience, we've been there in a place just a short time, but what a connection we made with the people there. That's Paul's experience. He has this strong connection. And as you read, or maybe as you heard this passage read this morning, what for you is the tone of the passage? What does it sound like in your ears? Or what's a word that might summarize what Paul is trying to get across? Anybody? For me, it's an important question to ask as we're reading the Bible. What's the tone here? Is Paul angry? I don't think so. Is he confused? I don't think so. Is he trying to correct some erroneous thought they have, some erroneous teaching? I don't think so. I'm going to call it the heart of Paul. This relational love, this affection, this connection, this longing, this aching for this people that really he hardly knows in some ways. He's been there for a few weeks, but all of his heart seems to be in these verses. So I'm thinking especially about a couple of images he uses in this passage to describe his relationship, we might say, as the leader, as the apostle, as the one who started this church, and I'm imagining maybe, I don't know, like 20, 30 people he's writing to. He's been there 3 weeks, maybe more, maybe less, but it's a small group of people in Thessalonica. And I'm amazed that halfway through the passage in verses 7 and 8, Paul says, just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you because we loved you so much. We were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. So for me, he's like heaping up. You know, we cared for you like a nursing mother cares for her child. We loved you. We were delighted to share with you, yes, the gospel, which I'm assuming is a sharing with words and teaching and preaching and conversations and maybe kind of back and forth. Not just the gospel, yes, the gospel, but also to share with you our lives. So I want to talk with you. I want to teach you. I maybe even want to preach at you, but I don't just want to do that. I also want to connect with you. Or maybe we might say, I want to hang out. I want to experience life with you, everyday life with you, which for me seems to be very much like the ministry of Jesus. Right? It's what I would call a both and kind of ministry. It's the word and the deed. It's the spiritual and the practical. So last week, some members from our church community went across the border to the States and went to a tulip festival. And I said to one of them last week, I said, isn't it great that we can meet together on Sunday mornings and sing and pray and worship, and then we can also go and enjoy tulips together? Like, for me, that seems to be the gospel of God and living our lives together. So we can enjoy tulips, we could have barbecues, we could maybe enjoy a movie together, help each other move from place to place. This both-and kind of reality that Paul himself experienced with these people. But I'm wondering this morning about this amazing image he uses, right? Like, Paul as a man says, we were like a nursing mother to you. Well, I don't know if that sounds kind of weird to us. I'm not sure how you're reacting to that. But we were like a nursing mother to you. We were caring for you just as much as a nursing mother does. Which might sound unusual, but certainly in the Bible, there are places where, for example, on the screen here, Isaiah 66, where God, who is always, not because he's male, but he always has male pronouns connected to him. He says of himself in Isaiah 66, as a mother comforts her child, so I, that is God, will comfort you, and you'll be comforted over Jerusalem. Now, I don't want to pit. I don't want to say what's better, but when I think about the deepest comforts I think most of us receive, maybe not all of us, but I just think it's the comfort of a mother that seems to be the deepest comforts that we receive in this life. And God uses that image of himself so powerfully to say, if you've had any experience of your mother comforting you, that's the same kind of experience I want to give you, my people. Or Jesus, and again, maybe it doesn't sound unusual to you, but it sounds unusual to me when he says in Matthew chapter 23, and again, for me, it's such emotional language. Like, Jesus is bearing his heart. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen. I've wanted to be like a hen gathering her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. For me, that's amazing language to use. For Jesus to say, I wish I was like a hen gathering you. Like a mother, a female bird, gathering her chicks. Now, what's also interesting to me is in this one passage, we were like a nursing mother. And then he says a few verses later, for you know, verses 11, 12, that we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, urging you to live lives worthy of God, who calls you into his kingdom and glory. So I'm kind of struck by that. We were like a nursing mother, and we were like a father. And who is the father, or what image of father does Paul have in his mind? The rough father, the tough father, the macho father, the unemotional father. The words he uses, encouraging, comforting, urging you. Like, this is all, for me, a mode of language. Not the typical language I think Paul would have used for a father in that first century context. But he's thinking about, I'm sure he's thinking about God as the Father. And what is God our Father doing? He's doing these kinds of things. I also want to point out that as Paul takes these images, nursing mother and father, he's not saying, well, we were warm to you and we were tough with you, right? We were gentle and we were harsh. We were the good cop and we were the bad cop. For me, both of these images are set in a very positive light. Right? They're godly images, they're spiritual images. And out of these two images comes this idea of we're caring for you, we're loving you, we're delighting in you. We're encouraging you, we're urging you, we want you to press on. I've known you for 3 weeks, and this is the language he's using as he thinks about these people. Now I'm thinking this morning, Paul, and for me, they're powerful images. Nursing mother, father. Nursing mother, father. I think we get some sense of God in the Bible like that. But I'm also thinking about a painting by Rembrandt van Rijn. I think it's quite a famous painting. One of his famous ones is the parable of the prodigal son from Luke 15. The moment the son returns home, I wish I could show it better. So people have talked about this painting, different features of it, but the one feature I want to point out this morning, what Rembrandt did, was when we zoom in on the hands of the father. People have pointed out Rembrandt intentionally, and as we zoom in, yeah. You know, when some of them you see paintings, oh, nice painting, and then someone says, oh, did you notice the hands? The hands that Rembrandt painted, people say he intentionally painted two different hands. The hand of a father and the hand of a mother. I love that image. I love that image. And that's what I see Paul doing here. All the best that a mother brings and all the best that a father brings, I want to bring to you. I want you to experience that. And this morning, I'm really making a direct connection between the passage we just read and our lives today. I'm doing that because I see in the passage the character of God. I see in the passage the ministry of Jesus. I see in the passage a call for us as we think about leadership, whatever kind of leadership we might be thinking about, or whatever leadership we're involved in, we're engaged in. This kind of leadership that Paul really shows us, or maybe really makes us feel, what's that like, a leadership for us? That not leaders as dictators, right? Not leaders as know-it-alls, not leaders as the controlling presence everywhere, not leaders even as coaches, because for me, coaches are people like on the side of the, get going! I'm not running, but you get running! Right? Coaches are kind of always a little bit they are on the sideline, and they're telling everybody else what to do. As I think about Paul here, he's not so much, you better, I'm going to tell you what to do. He is very much, I would say, very much a fellow traveler, right? I'm giving you the image, I'm like a nursing mother and a father to you, but I have been there as well, right? There was a time where I hated the church, and I hated Jesus Christ, and then something happened in my life. I can remember those days. And I'm encouraging you and urging you and wanting you so much also to have this experience in your lives. And this is what I'm going to suggest the children and youth in our church and in our lives need so much. Leaders who will care for them, encourage them, urge them, delight in them. We as adults, believe it or not, need this as well. Leaders who will encourage us and care for us and love us and urge us and delight in us. And then also in our church community. And I'm not suggesting this morning that our leaders are not like this. I don't believe leaders at Nelson Avenue are power-hungry or dictators, but I want to call us, for those of us who are leaders and for those of us who pray for our leaders, into this direction. You know, we are part, just the last number of weeks and for the next number of weeks, this annual process of electing or choosing, selecting new elders and deacons for our church. And for me, this is so important for us. Every year to be asking, who is God calling into these offices? And who are people who can step into this kind of role? Right? We are like the leaders of Nelson Avenue. We are like a nursing mother. We are like a father. We are urging, encouraging, delighting, calling, caring, loving you. And not just all those things all by themselves, not just for the sake of urging and encouraging, but as Paul says, kind of the climax of the message or the passage, to live lives worthy of God. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 12. We are urging, encouraging that you walk in a manner, live your life worthy of the God who calls you into his kingdom and glory. And this for me is not so much we have to be worthy enough. We have to try and try so that we might be worthy enough of God. But we think of God and we say, amazing, this God who reveals himself in the scriptures, how amazing he is. I want to live my life reflecting how worthy this God is. The gospel of Jesus, unbelievable what it says to us, the promises it has for us. I want to live my life reflecting how worthy that gospel is. So not trying to be good enough, but living my life so that people say, man, if you're following that person, if you're following that God, wow, what a God, what a Savior, what a Lord you must be following. Now, I've had an experience recently that's not exactly like this, but as I think about how does that work in our lives? I had an experience recently where, you know, I'm looking at myself and I'm realizing there's too much sugar going in this body. Too many donuts, too many Timbits, too much chocolate, too many candies, too much cake. I got to say no. I got to say no more often. But I'm realizing I just can't say no to all the chocolates and goodies. I got to do something else. So there's been some people in my life recently who've been, you know, say, let's do a little jogging together, you know. And you don't have to run the marathon, not even half the marathon. You just run 2 or 3K, right? And I was thinking, how did this happen? Like, why did I go jogging yesterday afternoon, like just beet red, sweating? Why am I doing that? And it feels like to me that the people who've been encouraging me are not telling me, you got to start jogging. Right? You got too much sugar in your body. They're not pointing the finger. The people who've encouraged me have said, hey, we're jogging already. We like jogging. We're going to continue jogging whether you join us or not. But wouldn't it be great if you joined us? And we're going to help you. And if you go really slow, we're going to go really slow as well. But just come along and join what we're doing. We're, in some ways, urging, encouraging. We'd love for you to experience the joy of jogging. And for me, as I reflect on it, it wasn't like a rebuke. It wasn't like, you better, look how good we're going. It was just like, come and join us. Come be part of it. This is great. It's going to be great for you. Now, this is the moment where I'm not exactly sure what to say. This is kind of like, I have a few things I could say, but I'm wondering, as I think about Paul in this passage, I'm thinking about the kind of leaders we need or the kinds of dynamics we need in relationships to live the life God's calling us to live. I'm wondering a little bit, how does that happen at Nelson Avenue or in our lives? So this is a moment where I'm wondering, can someone or a couple of people help kind of land the plane this morning? Is there someone, let's say from their life, who can say, well, this is how it happened. You know, this is how someone encouraged me to live a life worthy of God. This is a moment in my life where someone came alongside me, whether very intentionally or just sort of organically, and they helped me. They were urging me, encouraging me in this walk.